Adjoa Ando is a star of stage, screen, radio and audiobooks. Listeners may know her best as the voice of the number one ladies detective agency. I caught up with Adjoa Ando as she took a break from recording at the RNIB Talking Book Studios. I'll start off with the number one ladies detective series. Mm-hmm. They sound like great fun to record.
What's interesting about them is they give you a sort of a gentle snapshot into one perspective on Africa. They're gentle books. I think gentle is the word that comes to mind when I think about them. You know, they talk about difficult subjects in a gentle way, and they use Africa as a great backdrop for gentle detective stories with fun characters that you sort of come to know and love as the series develops. And what's great about them is you go from the beginnings of the detective agency, what caused Ma Ramotswe to have the detective agency in the first place, and then the lives of the people who join her. So you know, Ma Makutsi, and then Ma Ramotswe's Mr. Jelbi Matakone, her husband, who has the garage next door, and Futi Radifuti, who marries Ma Makutsi. So who owns a furniture shop. So you start to get this. He starts the building blocks of the world, Alexander McCall Smith, and then things come in and out of the world. And the actual detection is only part of the joy of the stories. You just see people develop and grow and have kids and grow up and fall in and out of relationships and friendships and have a sense of the world that they inhabit on a day-to-day basis as well.
Rather like a soap opera.
Yes, you could say they're sort of a gentle extended soap on the page or, you know, in the audio. Yeah.
I know you've also narrated several more hard-hitting books to do with Africa and the history of slavery. Have any of those really stuck in your mind when you've read them?
Well, I've done a whole heap of, I must have done over 100, in the hundreds now, of audiobooks. And given that I've got a Ghanaian father and an English mother, a selection of them have been set in Africa, which I love. There's a writer called Aminata Fauna who wrote a book called The Devil Who Danced on the Water, and another book called Ancestor Stones, which are about growing up in Sierra Leone with her father as the finance minister in the first post-independent government. I love her. Her mother was Scottish, her father Sierra Leone. Ancestor Stones is about the lives of four of her aunts. And she does it in a historic way. So she goes back to the founding of the village that her family grew up in. So you get a history of the tribes and the culture of Sierra Leone. But you get these fabulous stories about women who fall in love, women who never marry, women who deal with mental health issues. They are in Sierra Leone. Some of them travel to England. Some of them become businesswomen and travel all over the world. You hear all sorts of things. So you get a history of her family through these four women's stories, and you get a history of the country as well. So it's sort of rather brilliant. And then The Devil Who Danced on Water is about what it was like being a little girl in this country as her father became the finance minister with her Scottish mother, and then the civil war that happens in the country and the fear. And her father is, it's not a spoiler alert, he's a historical figure. Then her father is hung. So it's the book is the first 10 years of her life and the last 10 years of his and what happens to them. It's the terrifically moving writing. So those aren't fictional, they're factual books, but really wonderful. So she's a great favourite. Then you get slavery, so you get Africa from another perspective when you look at some of the works that are set in America. Interestingly, I'm here at the moment. We've bumped into each other because I'm recording some science fiction stuff here. There's a fantastic writer called Octavia E. Butler. She was writing science fiction from the 50s onwards. Black woman, extraordinary woman. And I suppose her most popular book is a book called Kindred, which came out in the 70s, which I haven't actually recorded. But I'd love to record it. Maybe I'm putting a little pitch. I'll record Octavia E. Butler's Kindred, anybody. But that tells the story of a woman who, through a sort of time warp in the fabric of, I don't know, whatever it is that we live in, gets flung back into slavery as a black woman. And she doesn't know when it's going to happen. So she can be sitting at her desk writing in America, and suddenly she's sucked back through this time vortex and she's a slave. And when she's a slave, that experience can last for months. And she's experiencing slavery like somebody from our era would experience it, with all the horror and the misunderstanding about what you're allowed to do and not allowed to do, and all of that sort of stuff. And then she gets flung back into her contemporary life, and then it goes backwards and forwards. And that book gave me a real chilling sense of what it is like to suddenly have no power or no agency or control over what happens to you. So there's a real range of work out there.
I first came across you when I was reading one of the Anne Leckie books.
Ah, yes.
Another sci-fi writer.
The great Anne Leckie.
And I believe you've read all her books to date.
I think
you?
I have, yes.
The Imperial Raj series.
Yep. What's so great about science fiction work, when it's extremely well written and thought through, is it becomes a space in which you can talk about our society but not have to be limited by the limits of our society. You can talk about what's possible. You can talk about morality. You can go to extraordinary worlds and have these amazing vistas and senses of what the parameters are that are just free of the limits of our parameters. There's another writer called Alistair Reynolds who is also extraordinary at doing that. And he's a physicist. And I remember reading one of his books where one scene, there is a woman whose family heritage is East Africa, who were very close with elephants. And East Africa had become the place where all space study was happening. She is living on a new planet that humans have gone to try to repopulate. And she gets dragged off into intergalactic AI wars. So she's talking to an artificial intelligence, which is manifest as an 8-year-old Chinese girl, but actually is an artificial intelligence that goes right across the universe. And they're talking to another intelligence, a massive female whale. So you've got this East African woman, the small Chinese girl who is really an AI, and a massive talking female whale, all having a conversation about science and what is going to happen to all the different planets. It's just these moments of bliss. And what you also have is you have three female characters not talking about blokes, which is bliss.
I was going to ask you, when you are clearly so busy, you've been a lead actor at the National, the RSC, you've had long-running parts in Casualty, EastEnders, Doctor Who, where you were Martha's mum,
mm-hmm.
MI High, which was my children's favourite programme for
hooray.
A very long time. You are the boss.
I am, yes.
I was going to ask you why you kept coming back to talking books, and I think you've actually answered the question already. You clearly love it.
I do. I love well-written material, and it doesn't really matter what medium. My father, as I say, is from Ghana, and I you know, he listened to the World Service, and I grew up listening to radio. I love storytelling. I love listening to stories. But also, specifically to the RNIB, I had an uncle who was a great sportsman. He played rugby for England in the 70s and a very physical person who got cancer. And one of the ways it manifest was that he had a tumour that pressed onto his optical nerves and he went blind. So he would listen to a lot of talking books. He would listen to a lot of storytelling. He would make me read things to him. And I really, really began to value the work in that way. Just that opening out of the storytelling, you know, the opening out of the literature. So I like listening to stories and I enjoy sharing that with other people. So, you know, I have a particular fondness for the work that RNIB does in that way. Literature should be accessible to everybody. And if I can join in with that, then I'm very happy to. Also, I'm gainfully employed doing something I love. What's not to like about that?
Indeed. And you have a beautiful voice that brings an awful lot of pleasure to those of us who can't actually read the physical copies of books anymore. I'm thoroughly looking forward to a weekend of sitting down and reading the White Giraffe series, because I'm interviewing its author, Lauren St. John.
Oh, yes, the White Giraffe series.
So,
they were great. Those books were great. They were so great. She has a real skill at, you know, books that are ostensibly aimed at, I don't know, young teen readers, perhaps. But they work, they just work brilliantly for everybody. I found them incredibly moving and engaging, those stories. Great central characters, plucky teenagers having to cope with really difficult and sad and frightening things in their life and finding ways to navigate their way through the world. So, you know, stories are very exciting but also full of great encouragement.
I do think that the young adult sector of publishing is probably the most exciting at the moment. Gone are the days where we protect children from the fact that people do die and people can be unfair and do get bullied. And yet there's that magical realism that operates in a teenage mind that just flows off the page. It's exciting.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, what's communicating, what's literature, what's storytelling for? I think it's what I call it's a heart-to-heart resonance. It's about being able to share experiences. It's about sharing experiences that may not be familiar in the detail of them. But, you know, we all go through the same things in different circumstances and in different ways. And to be able to explore how one copes with different situations and how one triumphs or fails within them and comes to some sort of way of being able to move forward is really important. And that's what's so exciting about stories. You can go anywhere you like with them, really, and that's great. I think that way of not shielding youngsters from trickiness is just honest, because it's not like they're not experiencing it. Let them read about it, hear about it, share other people's experiences and see and reflect on how they're managing their own.
Yeah, and develop their empathy.
Absolutely. Empathy, coping skills, permission to know it's all right to feel terrible about something and to feel like a failure or a disaster area, and to know that that's not the end of your life.
It's strange. You hear stories about ancillaries, and it seems like the most awful thing, the most viscerally appalling thing the Ratcha'ai have done. To invade and take, what, half the adult population? And turn them into walking corpses, slave to your ships, AIs? Turned against their own people? If you'd asked me before you annexed us, I'd have said it was a fate worse than death. She turned to me. Is it? None of my bodies is dead, Divine, I said. And your estimate of the typical percentage of annexed populations who were made into ancillaries is excessive. You used to horrify me, said the head priest to me. The very thought of you near was terrifying. Your dead faces, those expressionless voices. But today, I am more horrified at the thought of a unit of living human beings who serve voluntarily, because I don't think I could trust them.
My guest, Adjoa Ando, reading Ancillary Justice by Anne Leckie, which is TB21614. My thanks to Adjoa Ando, and you can find a full list of the books that she has narrated by going to the RNIB Library website at rniblibrary.com. Do you have a favourite narrator, or maybe you found a hidden gem in the library that you'd like to share? Drop us a line by emailing readonair@rnib.org.uk. That's readonair, all one word, @rnib.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you.